Thank you.
This is the 16th lecture, 3rd Joburg ACC, Thursday, 16th February. We're sure following the dates here. Your cases, I understand, are moving, except one case that is moving down. I told you cases had moved down. Don't worry about that. Very amusing. On the pre-havingness scale, you get along on the pre-havingness scale, you get a situation where the individual has, well, he's right up there, you see, at total can have everything. And then you assess him very nicely, and he can just have everything beautifully, and the next assessment is no effect. And he says, what has happened to me? Well, what has happened to him is he has got a social machine, which is just dandy, and it moved out. Society has been trying to rescue the human race with education, social education and school education and so on. And these educational activities, if pressed very, very hard and very, very forcefully, will actually build machinery. The individual will set up a machine and it's perfectly civilized, but he isn't. This is what's known as getting a civilization on a via. Only there's nobody there. That's no condemnation of educators, but it is definitely a fact that a thetan can mock up, Dianetics, Evolution of a Science, can mock up the god Throgmagog over on their right side, who knows all the answers and who is in terrific condition, and take orders from him from there on. Only trouble is Throgmagog has a finite period of existence. He is probably very effective from 3 days to 3 years. Now, having developed a total dependency on Throgmagog, Throgmagog disappears. Now what happens? Now what's a PC do? Oh, I don't know. He could do all kinds of things. He could get very desperate. He could join a social club or a gang or and get all of his instructions from there. And, of course, their instructions are now rooted through the defunct Throgmagog. It's very interesting. A thetan on his own has initiative, judgment, he can communicate, control, is interested in things, and so forth. But as soon as he gets these artificialities, as soon as he gets all these artificialities hooked up and connected up and all these vias going, why, he has a bad time. Well, what happens between the moment when his last moment of being himself and being effective and having initiative and so forth, and adopting some valence or machinery or circuits to tell him what to do? What happens between those two things? It's very important to you as an auditor, because it's happened so many times to your PC that you just keep pulling these things off. You pull off many sets of this Throgmagog situation. Many times. Well, what is it? He loses confidence in himself. He loses all confidence in himself and says, I on my own whiz-bang cannot exist, so therefore I have to adopt various machine beingnesses and so forth in order to exist. I myself am not capable of doing anything, so I will set up machinery which will be capable of doing something. In other words, when a thetan becomes totally degraded, he flips valences. Now, what happens as he comes out of this mess? The machines go downscale. And the thetan hooks in at some level of degradation. You get degradation coming off of a thetan who is going upscale. And sometimes the degradation is quite positive, and it's right there, and it's pretty gluey. Meh. So don't ever worry if the PC says, I feel terrible. Now, the natural consequences, of course, of losing confidence in himself is to bow out. He doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to take responsibility for his actions. He doesn't want to make the world his oyster. He doesn't want anything, really. So he sets up some artificial goals that kind of will get him by, more or less for his machinery. And the first sets of goals which you get off of a thetan, early in processing, are not the set of goals you will later get off of a thetan. So goals assessment is not something you're going to do and then forget. It's something that's going to have to be done after the case moves around a bit, all over again. We're getting closer and closer to the thetan's own goals. His goals, his own goals. His original goals are, to a marked degree, artificial or in agreement with the society in which he exists. They match up to the circumstances in which he finds himself. And very primarily, his goals are an effort to please when you first get them. Hardly anybody will admit to wanting to be a rocket jockey. You know, in this life, this time, you see, because it's not an acceptable goal. But maybe down deep he really wants to be a rocket jockey. And factually, he could probably find some civilization extant someplace in the universe right now that's functioning very well along this line. But no, he's there, and he wants to please everybody, so he says, I want to be a fireman. Parents don't much help out in early life with regard to goals. And you'll very often find a PC sitting there, gorgeously attired in all of Papa's goals or all of Mama's goals. And all of these seem perfectly reasonable to him. Now, we audit him for a while, and all of a sudden he feels very degraded, and he goes downscale and he comes upscale, and all of a sudden it's sort of a, well, what do you know? And now we get kind of a new set of goals. We get a new outlook on existence. What we have done is run out his unconfidence in self. And the vanishment of his unconfidence, of course, brings about a renewed view from where he sits. Now, actually, the probability is an awful lot of people feel terrible, personally, individually, as themselves, down deep. They feel like hell. But they've got it all mocked up on the Throgmagog system, that they're a man or a woman, and the now I'm supposed to's are all neatly in place, and they're going through life. And the only way you suddenly detect that this individual is not all right, not all there, is back of this facade, you occasionally see a set of claws. And they come around the cardboard and scratch hell out of you. And it gets so bad that instead of cooking dinner properly, why, this person leaves it in the ice box, you see. And then when they do cook dinner, why, they put it on the front burner, turn up the flame totally, and chart. And they just say, well, I just don't seem to be able to cook. Nyeh, nyeh, nyeh. A thetan starts making mistakes when he doesn't want to be right. His desire to be right or be wrong is factually a sort of a circuit or I'm supposed to all by itself. The individual actually, if his intentions work, will always be right, except as modified with the goals and targets and their turbulences. Well, I mean by that that an individual doesn't make mistakes of his own, you know, he doesn't make mistakes. This is what's very peculiar about the human mind. It doesn't make mistakes, and that's something for you to really know. Adding machines and computers, they can make mistakes, but not a living thing. It's a horrible thing to have to confront. But every one of those, quote, mistakes, unquote, are intentional. And there's where you sort of hook into the thetan. What is this fellow doing? Now, I can watch a girl in an office. Well, maybe she's filing cards or something like this. She's puttering around the office. I can watch her for a little while and find out exactly what she's trying to waste on the havingness line. She's trying to waste something. It's quite amusing. She may be trying to waste cards, or she might be trying to waste paper clips or something, but somewhere around there, she's trying to get rid of something. You watch people, this is aberrated people, and watch them in their workaday worlds, and you will find them trying to express themselves underneath all the social facade by kind of trying to get rid of the job. They're kind of trying to get rid of it. And it won't be very visible. It'll only be so big. Now, of course, when you get somebody whose mistakes are this compared to the permissible inch, why, of course, they're totally unemployable. The person is now obsessively making mistakes. You usually look at the human mind this way, that the aberration causes the person to make mistakes. It's observable and it's workable. But look, who's mocking up that aberration? Who's mocking up that bank? Now, we ask somebody, here's an interesting process, by the way, much more of a research process than anything else, although it has... You won't think so if you ever run it on somebody. You'll think, boy, this is the stuff. Trouble is, it's not very stable. But we say to this fellow, think of a woman. Think of a woman. Think of a woman. Think of a woman. That's the only thing we run on, you see. Think of a woman. Thank you. Think of a woman. Thank you. And let's see the kind of answers that he gets, basically. What's he get? Well, first he gets a non-existence of women. He's drawing a blank. And then he gets graveyards. And then he gets women lying around dead. This is a person who can't have women, let's see. And next, this would be his assessed terminal, or a little worse than his assessed terminal. Next, he gets women dying in agony. And then he gets women being sick. And then he gets women who are very ugly. And then, finally, he just gets women. It comes from the bottom up as you run this thing. Think of a woman. Thank you. Think of a woman. Well, what's he doing? Where's he getting these dead women and so forth? Well, it must be off some kind of an automatic machine, which is trying to supplant the scarcity of women. Now, all difficulty derives from havingness. Scientology 8008. This is a broader look at Scientology 8008, but it was first expressed then. The inability to mock something up means the inability to have it. Now, this may look a little odd to you when you first glance at it, because you say the inability To mock something up is the inability to have. Actually, that's the basis of creative processing. And if people could trustworthily work things up, old-time expanded Gita and some of the old-time havingness remedy processes and so on would be in use right this minute. You can cure a homosexual bang with this kind of thing. You can do all sorts of weird tricks. All on the subject of havingness. You ask somebody to what person they don't like or what kind of people they don't like, and you will find this sequence. The fellow says, I don't like a nanny. Don't like a nanny. Now, if you were to say right then, all right, mock up a nanny, you would give him a lose. So you sort of say, what part of a nanny could you mock up? It'd be something weird like the nanny's footprints on the beach an hour after she has gone. And you can run a gradient scale here, and you can get him to mock up different parts of the nanny and clothing and her shadow and that sort of thing. Move on in, and all of a sudden he can mock up a nanny. And you say, how do you feel now about nursemaids? Well, they're all right. His antipathy was based on a can't have of them. And your first edge in of remedy of his havingness is to put him back into a position where he can create it. Now, that is a fundamental of Scientology and one that you shouldn't forget because havingness has moved right up to the front here. Here's a person with an allergy to milk. At first, if there were just millions of gallons of milk in the world, couldn't have any. Couldn't have any milk, but could pour it down the sink. And finally, we run milk, mock-up, conditions surrounding milk, and we finally move it up through a gradient scale of pouring it down the sink and doing various things with this milk, and eventually get them to a point where they could drink a glass of milk if it was the last glass of milk in the world and there were babies in the house dying for lack of milk. And the person's allergy to milk will not only be gone, but won't come back. That's the end of that. The remedy of havingness of a specific thing subjectively results in an ability to have that thing. That's lots of wisdom in that, because that'll straighten up anybody. Now, the reason he can't have it is quite multiple. He has decided not to have it because it was scarce. But how did he get it scarce? We decided he couldn't be trusted with it or some such thing. And so he started to cut down on it. It got scarce. He made it scarce, too. And underneath this, you change this condition of mind about its scarcity. And at the same time, you will change his condition of mind about being able to tolerate it. Because, of course, while you're getting a remedy of havingness on this particular item, you're increasing his ability to confront it, and you're changing his mind with regard to his relationship to it. But you, the auditor, can actually shift his frame of mind with regard to all these scarce things. Now, when something gets totally scarce, we get a condition of disbelief, total disbelief. There's no spaceships around right here, but there are a few mock-ups of them in the movies and in magazines. There's science fiction. But you can go out here in the society right now and talk to people in spite of the Sputniks and Rutniks and USniks and other things that are bombarding the Transvaal regularly. You can go out here and ask, oh, some old dud, and say, well, sir, you believe in spaceships? Yeah, spaceships. Yeah. Well, why is he so emotional about it? Well, now, let me point out a condition here, which goes a little bit further in the line of beingness on this old track of havingness. As it gets scarcer and scarcer, the person more and more obsessively becomes it. Now, that's weird. But that's a rule, and it's a law, and it's true. The more scarce it gets, the more valuable it gets. And the more he has to hold on to it, and the closer he has to hold on to it, and it gets to a point where if he doesn't look at it, he won't as is it. So we find some young girl, and we say, well, what do you think about flying saucers? And she says, nya, 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 nya. And the E-meter's going, boom, boom. And we say, well, what do you think about pilots on spacecraft? And the needle goes, bang, you know. And she says, oh, it's nonsense. Utter nonsense. There's never been such a thing. Never will be such a thing. It's marvelous. He's sitting right in front of you being a space jockey. And if you can sort it out and you hit it on the button and you run her in this particular category, this girl who says knitting and tatting are the thing, and you must have a down-to-earth aspect about all things. Turns out, blast pistols and crack space helmets and all kinds of wild, weird paraphernalia. It has nothing to do with being a girl. And you say, what's going on here? Well, you've caught something just at the last ebb of disappearance. The last dregs out. Well, the earliest unconfidence, then, must be the belief that one can no longer create something. That must be the earliest unconfidence. Because if valences march down the line of havingness, and if they march down the line of degradation, then that's where they must cross. The degradation must come about through an inability to create. That must be the earliest degradation. Who would have a scarcity if he could create it? Who would have a scarcity of anything if he could create it? Nobody would, of course. There's another process that goes along this line, which is quite amusing. Get the idea of creating money right on the table, right here. Now get the idea that would spoil the game and don't do it. If you run this very long on somebody, they'll be having an awful time because they know that if you ran it long enough, money would start appearing on the table in front of you. And they know very well that is the case. It would spoil the game. If everybody could mock up unlimited quantities of money, what would happen to this game called economy? It would spoil the game. Now, in a much more nebulous state, we can take somebody who doesn't have pictures or doesn't have good pictures. And we say to him, all right, now get the idea, or decide was the original one, decide to mock up a picture the size of that whole wall. Now, get the idea that would spoil the game, and don't do it. And before we've asked him that very many times, he gets great, big, full color, 3D facsimiles, you know? Stuff that would make Warner Brothers turn green with envy. So somehow or other, by not creating, we assume that this PC is trying to keep the game from being spoiled. Therefore, the game must be more important even than havingness. So we get the game being experience. Experience consists of beingness, doingness, and havingness. So if we take all three factors of be, do, have, and straighten them out in the PC, in whatever fashion we can straighten them out, we will have somebody who can have a game, who can create, most of his scarcities will suddenly vanish. They'll start vanishing on him. You see how many ways we can approach this. This may be a little bit over your heads in some spots, but you look it over. Creativeness, who would have a scarcity if he could create anything? If he could create everything or anything, he certainly could have no scarcities, right? But unlimited creation brings about the liability of no gain. So he increases his game's condition by decreasing his havingness. And then he goes too far. And he goes to the point of no return on this thing that he can accomplish, and he's had it. His degradation comes about when he ceases to create. He decides not to create. He promises people not to create. The reason he would do that would be because he wanted a game. You know, they decide that they won't create unlimited quantities of planets. And then they can have a big game trying to get somebody else's planet. Got the idea? You see, if you had unlimited scarcities, which is about what the world is amounting to right now, you would have unlimited numbers of games. But if you had, if you have a game, there's got to be something to gain from it. There's always, Hollywood calls it rather inelegantly, the weenie. It's plot writer talk. There's always something that everybody is after. It may be the girl, it may be the guy, it may be the treasure in the Sierra Madres, it may be something. It may be somebody's respect. It may be simply a love affair with some desirable male or female. You got the idea? It may be only the solution to a crime. But there is a weenie there. So everybody is after this one. Everybody's trying to solve this one. You'll either try to keep it from being found or trying to find it and so forth. And there's some reward inherent in every game. A game is not a game without a reward. Well, you can't have a reward if you have unlimited ability to create on the part of everybody. That's quite fascinating to look at and recognize that a person will reduce his ability to create in order to have a game. Now, therefore, all games come under the heading of beingness, doingness, and havingness. There's the three things, beingness, doingness, havingness. Plus or minus. You're preventing somebody from being, preventing somebody from doing, preventing somebody from having. And that is the last notch of a game. That's hardly any game left. The person that's playing that game is psychotic. He's trying to keep everybody from being, trying to keep everybody from doing, trying to keep everybody from having. He's crazy. That's your total games condition. He's involved in so many past games that he doesn't know there aren't any games going on at the present time. In other words, he isn't even in a games condition. It's in a minus games condition. There is no game. You eventually will find these people working out to a no game. The reduction in the ability to create is done to bring about a game. All right? I'll give you an idea. There's a universe here. And you realize that if you were making all the space which you made, and your friends were making all the space they could make, that space would get an awful conflict. First place, you wouldn't have much communication because you'd all be in different spaces. But you couldn't possibly be in the same line of present time with everybody making all the space that could be made, an infinity of space, you see. Or am I everybody making an infinity of matter, or everybody on an infinity of anchor points, or something like this, you see? So in order to have association and games and so on, you reduce the infinity. And you will actually find engrams on the track where everybody is busy agreeing not to make space. Because if they all made space, you see, why, then everybody'd get in everybody's road. So you're honor bound, if you're in the game, to pull in your anchor points. Except that goes on just so long. We get a philosophy known as teamwork and so forth as part of this. It goes on just so long, and then everybody swallows his anchor points, and there's nobody putting up any anchor points, and you have no game at all, no game possible. You might wonder why the British Empire is pulling in its horns to the degree it's pulling them in. It's sure pulling them in. You know, it's backing up off of all of its empire reach and so on. Well, it's getting into a no game. See, it probably figured out, it got convinced in some fashion or another that it was putting out too many anchor points too far, you know. After all, it had the Dutch and the French and other people in contest with it a few hundred years ago. And these people worked very hard to convince Great Britain that it mustn't put out its anchor points, don't you see? But this thing Great Britain did, and then it sort of hung fire. And then they started pulling in their anchor points because they didn't have anybody to fight with. There was nobody else to play a game with. There was no empire as great as the British Empire for a little while, you see? So they said, well, maybe we better pull back off of something or other and let somebody else have that, and then we will have an opposite number. And then they kept pulling in, pulling in, pulling in, and all of a sudden it just got obsessive. They say, well, let's get out of everything. That's what they're doing right now. There's no more explanation than that to freedom for this and freedom for that and freedom for somebody. And you people won't let these people be free, and this game which is going on right at the present time. And boy, they're sure producing enough games condition, aren't they? Do I make my point? Boy, there's games going on all over the place. Too doggone many games, but there's been such a scarcity of games of this particular character that these games are pretty rough. They're not very orderly games. You see how this is? For some peculiar reason, the United States refuses to play a game or insists on big games conditions. And they go out and conquer countries, like in World War II, you see, and they can't go home fast enough. And they just abandon the poor country and its economics and everything else and leave weak governments in there that start collapsing in all directions and so forth. The Cuban situation right this minute is a result of an action taken by the United States about 1900. They freed Cuba. They didn't leave Cuba with any government. They just freed Cuba and went home. And Cuba's had nothing but revolutions since. They conquered Mexico and promptly went home, and there hasn't been a government in Mexico since. Got the idea? But there's sure been a lot of randomity. There's sure been a lot of confusion going on. So they're doing it fast. They're making a quick one out of it. You go over and knock somebody out totally, see, and then you pull out quick. Then you say, well, you're free, and we have no colonial ambitions of any kind whatsoever. Go ahead and fall on your face. They do. Politics, I use politics to show you individual things, not because I'm terribly interested in politics. Usually I have a rather ribald attitude toward politics. Politics based on the idea that there can be a political philosophy which will overcome all the difficulties of the individual, and that you can make a wonderful government and a wonderful country without any people in it. This, of course, looks to me, this just looks asinine, that's all. Looks silly. To get back to this game's condition, when a fellow starts pulling in, He's trying to make room for somebody else to have a game, you see. He wants some action. And then he doesn't get the action, and he pulls in too far. And the next thing you know, the only person that's getting action, you see, will be himself on the receiving end. He isn't in any game. The Thetans' difficulties in adjusting a game's condition are immediately derived from the fact that he never does adjust to the game he wants. He overshoots it, or he undershoots it, or something of the sort. He makes mistakes, you might say, and that's probably the only mistake he's susceptible to. Other than that, he doesn't make mistakes. When he makes a mistake that you see as a mistake, there's usually some long involved concatenation to it. And you see, when he's pulling in, he's just trying to find a game. And when he's pushing out, he's trying to live with himself. Experience, the ability, willingness to experience, to have an experience, and so forth, itself becomes scarce, don't you see? You get a scarcity of experience. After a fellow has lived through the white-hot experience of a war, lots of excitement, and not too much responsibility, able to shoot up anything or so forth, kill men at will, all kinds of various liberties, which wouldn't be considered much of a liberty. He comes out at the other end of the war. His experiential pattern has gone like this, you see, very high here, and all of a sudden at the end of the war goes thump. And he doesn't know what to do about this. He gets unhappy, he gets upset about this. And he'll try to do something to remedy his experience. But in view of the fact that he's adjusted to a pattern of experience which now no longer exists, he's trained in skills which now have ceased to have any meaning, he gets lost and he doesn't know what he's doing. Usually after a great war, there's usually a lot of small wars will happen. Little wars, one kind or another. And it's no more and no less than Thetans who have been in the big show getting over into little shows, trying to put it back together again and follow out that same experiential pattern of war. That's all it is. It just has no great political significance. And their anxiety to have a game in a war will result in a tremendous amount of destructiveness. Wars get very destructive. Wars aren't always destructive. Early on the track, you find wars being relatively indestructive. The Chinese used to have methods before the Japanese war, used to have methods of fighting a war which were very undestructive. Two armies would maneuver until one army had the other army at a strategical chessboard disadvantage. Nobody's firing any shots. And then the guy who had the other army in the bad spot would, of course, get it to surrender by making a bid of $10 mex for every rifle that was being carried by the other army. That'd be the end of the war. Very, very amusing watching a war which doesn't have anything to do with shooting anybody. But games are not necessarily wars. And when an individual gets down to a point on this planet where he believes he can't have any action or excitement or be interested in anything without killing people and destroying property and being guided politically into some mad series of crimes of one character or another, he's in bad shape. He's already in bad shape. He's obsessively going forward in some fashion. His idea of a game has been very, very, very twisted up. He no longer knows what a straight game is. In other words, his interest level is poor. There are all kinds of games, and they are not all connected with destructiveness. So as you process somebody, you're also remedying his havingness of games. All right, let's go back over these points. A Thetan limits his creativeness in order to have a game. He limits it too far, and he has too much gain. Now, he conceives that he has made a mistake, and having conceived it, why, he decides he's not trustworthy or something of the sort, or that he himself all by himself can't have a game, and life has now gotten too rough for him, he's got too much game or something like this, so he adopts another beingness. He himself gets degraded. Then things start going on automatic, and everybody is running some other beingness than himself and hoping that this confusion will result in some sort of a game's condition. Now, with a limitation of creativeness, you get a limitation of havingness. And the limitation of havingness, of course, is all part and parcel to games. But people believe, you see, that havingness will just go on automatically forever. The United Nations plays this game right now. It's having a wonderful idea. It has a charter. I was going to put it up one time in various organizations, just a publicity stunt. But I read it. That was unfortunate for the United Nations. I read it throughout and haven't bothered putting up their charter anyplace. It assumes that there will be enough for everybody without anything being created anyplace. Man has a right to a job and old age pensions and unemployment insurance and a house and votes, and he has rights to have everything. But he hasn't got any right to produce anything. And the people that produce things aren't even mentioned in that charter. And we get a philosophy of parasitism. Everybody's going to be a parasite on existing havingness. But it's made no guarantee at all that there's going to be any havingness. There's not going to be any havingness, but everybody can have it. That's just asking for it. That's just asking for it the wild way. Nobody has any right to employ anybody. Nobody has any right to ask of anybody any work. Nobody has any right to have any money. It's marvelous. There are no haves in that charter at all, but there's a lot of gets. You have a right to get. But how are you going to get it? It's not going to exist. It's quite amusing. Most of your political rabble-rousers and so forth of this particular time are all on that philosophy. They say everybody has a right to have, but nobody need produce. Soon as they get into power, they recognize their great difficulty. They suddenly look at the hole in their scheme, which is production, lack of. And they go totally over onto production. And they say everybody's got to produce and nobody has any rights to have anything. They do a total reversal. Well, they have to. They got in power by promising a lot of things that didn't exist, and now they've got to maintain their power by furnishing these things. And they aren't there, so they've got to make a phobia out of production. I find right now that most of these philosophies flip the instant they win. They go bing, and there they go. Now, if you reestablish a person's creativeness, somewhere up along the line, you think you're liable to run into difficulties. Because all of a sudden his creativeness will be so good, you see, that it'll knock out all the games that are, and he'll run on to a negative game condition. This is not necessarily true at all. The scarcity of games is there, and you're remedying his havingness of games all the way up the line. So his ability to create and his havingness of games goes on up together. Now, a no-games condition could exist if somebody is expected to sit on Mahomet or a mountain or something from here on out. He's just supposed to sit there, you know. He's clear, you know, and he just sits there. He doesn't do anything. He's not supposed to do anything. He's in total serenity. He's got no games condition, has he? Well, something must have been wrong with his processing. He actually didn't make much progress. He just got to a point where he could sit on a mountain and be serene. Next thing you know, this fellow's, he's improperly processed. Next thing you know, this fellow is going to be saying to himself, now let's see, how can I get aberrated? How can I get aberrated in order to have a game? Therefore, it's fairly necessary to make a balanced progress. Somebody says, well, all I want to be is exteriorized and sit on cloud nine. You know, I could exteriorize that person and put them on cloud nine. Boy, would they be unhappy. You can exteriorize anybody. You say, try not to be 3 feet back of your head, and most people come out of their heads, wham. A real case gain is not a sudden jolt up into the total serenity of it all without any games possible. A real case gain consists of a balanced doingness, havingness, and beingness. And if those things stay in balance as they go up, why, that's fine. Now, of course, you have your elements. Here you have order of test of havingness and confront commands, bulletin. You're raising your individual's havingness, thereby rendering him stable. And you're giving him control over his attention with his various confront processes. And by running a terminal, you're getting rid of excessive not beingness. Now, help is the closest thing then to valence. Help is a button. Valence. These things are quite parallel. So if you run help on a terminal, keep a person's stability up with his havingness, and give him better control of his attention with confrontingness, you, of course, are moving him up on beingness, doingness, and havingness all at the same time. If you just go in at the bottom and remedy his ability to create, just fix him up so he can do unlimited creation. I've given you in this lecture a process by which you can do this. You say, decide to create something, you know. Now decide that would spoil the game, because that's the process by which he actually got down. You just rehabilitate his creativeness, not his beingness, not his doingness. Just neglect those. And then just rehabilitate his ability to create. You can get him up to cloud nine. You can get him sitting on the top of the mountain in total serenity. And boy, will he be unhappy. Therefore, a forward progress in a case means a balanced progress in a case. A person's beingness, a person's doingness, and a person's havingness all have to increase more or less on a parallel line. If you do that, you'll find your PC gets more active. You'll find that he gets more in motion. You'll find out his beingnesses and concepts of beingness are better. Consequently, his concept of games is better. Now you see, as he walks upstairs on beingness, doingness, and havingness, his games ideas will shift. But you'll find at first, at the lowest rung, when he himself sort of becomes himself, his first game, the lowest game that he will run into, is sitting on, it's a total reversal, sitting on the mountain in total serenity. That's the first game he'll run into. Matter of fact, you won't have many PCs who come up to that. They have had the idea, maybe sometime in the past, but you usually find them above that point. When you find these fellows who are just going to go out and sit in the desert and be holy men, after you've processed them for a while, you haven't gotten any place. You've gotten to the most negative game there is. Now, from that point down, of course, it's all confusion with some other beingness. But from that point up, a person comes into the games of violence. A person comes up, you know, just like I gave you the cycle of think of a woman. See, think of a woman. He gets a non-extant woman. Think of a woman, think of a woman, think of a woman. And he gets up there to a point where he gets graveyards full of women. And think of a woman, think of a woman. He gets dead women. Think of a woman, think of a woman, think of a woman. He gets women in agony, dying. And think of a woman, think of a woman, think of a woman. And he gets, finally, women. Got the idea? Runs the same way on games. As you remedy his beingness, his doingness, and his havingness, his first game is a non-extant game. It's a game of no doingness, no beingness, no havingness. And he moves on up to a type of game that is a nice, quiet game with everybody good and dead. And then he'll move up to a point where the game must be total violence, death and destruction. Total violence for a game. And then he moves on up into the strata of where he really can have a game. Now you'll find out he'll take interest in various games, which don't have anything to do with graveyards or mountains or anything else. The remedy of specific illnesses in a case can always be approached through remedying his havingness. The most crude way that is still effective of remedying an illness, the fellow has a bad leg, it's think of a leg, thank you, 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 think of a leg, thank you. That's it. His leg will move up through the various stratas that I have just mentioned to you. It'll go up scale. He's changing his considerations about legs. It has to be a body part. It has to be a terminal. And that is the crudest, but most effective at a level of crudity method of getting rid of a psychosomatic. Now, it may or may not remain stable because you didn't do anything about his confront. In general, you didn't do anything about his havingness, his stability. I mean, his objective havingness. So it might or might not remain stable. But if you did that and had his havingness and had his confront process and just ran this, think of a leg, and then ran some, you know, a long time, and then stabilize him in the room and get his general confront up, and then back to think of a leg, you'd probably make him well. Backs go very easily out of action because they are, of course, never visible. Person never sees his own back, not in this day and age where they're dead in their heads. But you could do everything a chiropractor ever did by finding a fellow's havingness, finding his confront process, and you know he's got a bad back. So you've got these other two. You've gone up the pre-havingness scale until he could finally have something objectively easily. You fooled around with confrontingness. The most elementary thing is that shift of attention, concentration of attention that I gave you earlier. That is the most elementary confront process there is. Runs very low, evidently, too. And you just say, well, think of a back, thank you, think of a back, thank you, think of a back, thank you, you see. And then run some havingness, run some confront, and think of a back, think of a back. You get results. But help on a back, of course, would start running out all the times when he allied himself as or was a back. And help, although you find it on the havingness line, basically leads up to cleaning up beingness faster than anything else. Help is a crossroads. It is a doingness and a beingness and a havingness all at the same time. So when you're running help on anything, you're separating out valences and you get increases and so forth. You mustn't lose track of this thing called help. I haven't given you this as an advised routine or regimen. I'm just showing you what you could do with the factors which I've been talking to you about. Anything you cared to do with a case, it would be very wise to follow the procedure of not doing anything desperate with a case until you had the havingness, objective havingness process and the confront process of the case. Now, when you've got those two worked out, no matter how you had to get in there, with the pre-havingness scale or any other way, when you've got those two, it's safe to do things with a case. It's not safe to do anything you want with a case because you can straighten him out. And every gain you make will be a stable gain. But without the objective havingness and without the confront, you do not have means of cleaning up the environment, and you don't have means of cleaning up the bank. And your concentration on some specific terminal will just start piling the bank up. You may get him over being allergic to women, but you'll certainly leave an awful lot of debris. You'll have debris all over the place in the bank, don't you see? You had no confront process to clean it up. And as far as havingness is concerned, never expect a case to remain stable until you can get a stability in the present time. So, in straightening up people, there are these various things which you do straighten up. The best ways to straighten them up, directly and actively, is to somehow or another get him up to a point where he has his havingness process. Somehow or another, get him so he got his confront process. And now, do what you please in straightening up his help. Somehow or another, you're going to get in there and straighten up the help line and so on. But you make gains, and they will be permanent gains. Take a case that's having a terrible lot of difficulty with his hip. Roll up your sleeves and run something that has to do with his hip, 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 with his hip. No. Because even if you made it well, you probably won't make it stably well. The safe way to run a case is always, whether you have to use the pre-havingness scale or not, find the PC's objective havingness, find the PC's confront, and run your stable gains up the line with help. Now, what do you have to do to get a case up to that point? Let your pre-havingness scale and what I've been teaching you earlier. But this is a way to keep a case there and keep it stable and let the fellow still have game in present time. Thank you.